love is not exclusive to having a life partner. Love can be loving your siblings. Love can be all different people. It can be loving your friends. It's just having love in your life. And then I went even farther and I realized love doesn't even end at people. You can love travel. You can love nature. You can love your morning routine. You can love fitness. You can love your craft. You can love art.
I'm Michael Chernow, and this is the Creatures of Habit podcast. Our habits will make us or break us. It's just that simple. I've lived on both sides of the tracks and have learned that the decisions we make on a consistent basis truly define who we are as human beings. On this show, I will be interviewing some of the most inspiring, motivating, and high-performing humans I've encountered to share their daily habits, routines, and rituals that help them stay on top of their game and ultimately happy. So sit back, relax, and pay attention, because what you hear over the next 30 to 45 minutes could potentially change your life. Let's go. What up, guys? Welcome back to the Creatures of Habit podcast. We're doing this thing. We're consistent. And I just want to thank you for helping us do just that. I'm excited to announce a few things that I'm going to be talking a little bit about in the beginning of these podcasts, because it's a big deal for me. It's a big deal for the Creatures of Habit podcast. But we have recently partnered with Lance Armstrong and the We Do Production Network. So Creatures of Habit podcast will now be in the We Do umbrella, and you can expect to hear from Lance a bunch, because he and I are going to connect and do a bunch of podcasts together. So I'm really excited to make that announcement. I'm also equally excited to introduce our guest today. His name is Frank Paul Vignola. He is a men's life coach. He really harnesses this trying to empower men to find self-mastery. And through that process, ultimately, he focuses a lot on masculinity. And I think that word we've been hearing a lot about over the last couple of years, masculinity. What is masculinity? Is it a bad word, right? Like, is masculinity a bad word? As far as I'm concerned, hell no. It's not a bad word. It's an amazing word. It's a powerful word. So we're going to dive into that stuff for sure. Frank and I actually did some work together. We connected on social media, and we started DMing, and I was like really interested in the work that he was doing. And he actually brought me through a process where we went through, we found my core values. You know, we found, I've done core values for my businesses. I felt very strongly about that. But Frank said, hey, what are, you know, do you personally have core values for your life? You. And I was like, man, I don't. And so we went through this probably 5-week long process, which was awesome. And I'll share what my core values are, because we distilled it down to 4 while we're in the conversation. But I really do think having a coach and a guest on the show that works with men, you know, for all the ladies listening, this is a great episode for you too, to get a peek into potentially this kind of work. So without further ado, Frank Paul Vignola.
What's going on, brother?
What's up,
it's
man?
Good to finally fucking meet you in person, man.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
You've got a pretty interesting story. And the thing is that I think you know a little bit about my story, but I didn't know a lot about your story until I dug into your bio. And you've got a pretty significant story as well, in terms of coming out of addiction and incarceration and things like that. You've sort of blossomed into this human being, and now you're helping men, you know, by the thousands. So I want to just kick off the episode and just get it out of the way. Please, please define masculinity through your lens.
So masculinity, I'll tell you the way I define it in my book, Crafting Masculinity, because I think that there have been a lot of people before me who have tried to define masculinity. And I think if you're trying to take something that is subjective and kind of can be gray, and you trying to turn it into something black and white, somewhere along the line, you're going to be grasping at straws and negotiating your own biases. So I decided that the question that I think men wanted to have answered more so than what is masculinity, because yes, how do we craft it? How do we cultivate it if we don't know what it is first? My definition of masculinity for the purpose of the work that I do is qualities that men want qualities that men admire in other men and want for themselves. So in the years, 10 plus years that I've been coaching guys from all different backgrounds, all different parts of the world, all different age groups, we're talking straight, we're talking queer, different cultural backgrounds and whatnot. What I'm noticing is that there's parallels. There's parallels in what they admire in other men. There's a lot of commonality in that, despite differences in background, age, and so on. So I started noting these parallels. And what I did is I kind of put them together and I said, I'm gonna create a book and I'm gonna call it Masculinity, Crafting Masculinity. But my definition of masculinity, which I think I hoped that guys were going to find more functional, useful, is a cultivation of qualities that they specifically admire in other men, wish they had, perhaps feel inadequate about in themselves and want for themselves. So that's really what it is. It's mixed in with my ideals that I grew up with and the ideals that I think a lot of us grew up with, and trying to find the positive quality underneath some of those ideals, because as you noted earlier, masculinity kind of gets a bad rap.
Now,
right, exactly. And yeah, I mean, sure, there's a dark side to masculinity just as much as there's a dark side to femininity. And I think some of the masculine ideals that we grew up with probably veered over into the dark side a little bit. So my approach was to take the positive quality underneath that ideal and find a way for guys to apply it to themselves in a way that is both healthy and that aligns with their individuality. So that's the long answer.
Can you, I mean, now I obviously have to ask a question. So when you were, through your journey of coaching men, you said that you noticed a number of parallels that, men were sort of flagging as qualities that they admire in others. Are there a handful that you can talk about that you kept seeing come up?
A big one, it was a sense of identity. It was a sense of self-worth, which I believe is the foundation of really anything that you want to cultivate for yourself. It's the foundation of self-mastery. So if you're looking to acquire masculine virtues such as perseverance and other things, I think that it needs the foundation of self-worth in order to attach itself to any truth, is that you have to know your worth first. So it started with that. I think another thing that guys often speak about is, maybe they don't use the terminology self-worth, but they say confidence. I want to be more confident. I want to be more extroverted, or I want to be more, have more conviction in the way that I speak. Now, that could be internal or external. It could be that they want to feel more confident in social interactions, or it can even get down to the technical side of it, where it's about developing their voice like an instrument. I've had guys come to me and say, I don't like the way that I speak. And I say, well, we can give you a more masculine voice. The voice is an instrument. It's a lot of people balk at that because they say, well, I'm betraying my authenticity if I'm trying to sound like somebody else. Well, don't try to sound like somebody else. But if you tell me right now that you don't think that your voice is an instrument that you could cultivate and craft, just like we can craft and change our body and contour our body and change other parts of ourselves, then yeah, you're selling yourself short.
Do you mean like the actual sound?
Absolutely. It's an instrument. We can play with the pitches. A lot of us grow up hearing things a certain way. I grew up around women. Mm-hmm. I don't have any brothers. I grew up around women. So I was inspired by women. The people who I modeled after were women when I was younger. I thought my older sisters were cool. So I started picking up their isms. You know what I mean? I didn't realize that it gave me a higher pitch in my voice, that I was speaking in my upper register more often, or that I was using an upward inflection at the end of my sentences. And when I wondered later, why do I sound feminine, or why does my voice sound less masculine? It's because, just objectively speaking, this isn't a judgment. It's just objectively speaking, when we look at commonalities in male voices, mm-hmm. and commonalities in female voices, we do see a different range in the pitch. And there I was doing things that were more common in females. Is that okay? Of course it's okay. But if I decided that I want to change it because I want to see what else my voice can do, mm-hmm. is that not self-mastery? Yeah.
Yeah. In my mind, this idea that like, I'm proud of my masculinity, man. Like,
yeah.
I'm genuinely proud of my masculinity. And I don't subscribe to this like womanizing overly aggressive, power-hungry version that masculinity has sort of been sort of encapsulated in over the last few years. Mm-hmm. But man, am I proud of my strength and my confidence and my ability to walk into a room and feel present and feel like I have control over my over what I'm doing, and I know that I have some influence that I've worked on. And something that I think you said, which was that really stood out to me, was like men, you know, reach out and say, hey, I want to work on my confidence. Mm-hmm. And what I've learned about, there's like three things from my experience as being a husband, father, business owner, human being that loves myself. I genuinely do.
Yeah.
Three things that I have sort of distilled it down to that allow me to feel this way on a pretty regular basis, comfortable in my masculinity. Mm-hmm. Consistency, practice, right? It's just doing the same thing over and over and over and over again. And some people would say that's monotonous. In my mind, I'm like, no. When you do the same thing over and over and over and over again, you get better at it. So it doesn't stay the same. You see progress, you get better, and that's ultimately what builds confidence, right? Mm-hmm. So it's consistency, and then you get to this confidence component, right? So the consistency builds the confidence. Now you have the ability to open the door and walk into a room and feel like not that I don't walk into rooms and feel insecure at times, because I fucking certainly do. But what the consistency does for the confidence is once I start to feel that I have this ability, once I start to feel that I have been able to like make some shit happen through my confidence, well, now I've got courage, right?
Yeah.
And like the courage piece is like the, in my mind, it's the good to great component. It's the ability to genuinely pick up a tool that you've never used before in your life and just fucking put it to the wood.
Yeah.
Right? And like most men, myself included, early days, and I use this as a tangible example, when I opened up the meatball shop and my business partner Daniel had a ton of experience with power tools. His father was a general contractor. I grew up in New York City in a small apartment. There was no power tools going on, and my father was my father was very proficient. He didn't teach me a goddamn thing. So we walk in his restaurant. We didn't hire a general contractor. We didn't hire a construction crew. He and I did the work, and I was like, dude, I don't even know where to start. We had grinders and saws and sawzalls and all sorts of shit, and I'm like, I don't even know. He's like, just fucking grab the thing and go. He's like, just start sawing the shit down, and we're demoing this place. And so now being able to like literally walk up to a tool and pick it up and be like, whatever, I'm going, you know, like I'm going to learn as I go.
Yeah.
That's that courage component.
Yes.
That in my mind, and that's like obviously a smaller example of it, but that in my mind is really like sort of a self-awareness piece that is necessary to progress
and to excel. Find that confidence that you're talking about. Yeah.
I think the confidence brings you to, without the confidence, you look at the tool and you like either don't touch it or you go and ask for help, which I've got no problem with asking for help. I love asking for help. But at times you're going to have to go and grab that tool and fucking turn it on and go.
Amen, brother. And I think that's one of the approaches that I take with my guys when they come to me and they say, how do I cultivate confidence? Sure, I have some methodology for that. You know, we'll help you understand your values. That'll give you more identity clarity. We'll assess your character strengths. That will give you more of a sense of worth of what you're good at. That's a great start, but it's also what you're saying. I think that the way you said it is that it's the confidence that pushes you to do something you're not comfortable doing, and then you're rewarded with like, you land on courage. And for my guys who actually are lacking confidence and they don't know where to find it, and they're waiting to feel confidence to take that action that you were just talking about, I often tell them, I say, I want you to see confidence as the reward, not the necessary requirement for you to take the action. I want you to call upon courage. And they say, well, I don't feel courage, I feel fear. That is courage. Courage doesn't exist without fear, is that you feel the fear, and then you are gifted with an opportunity to act courageously. So it's a choice. It's a switch. It's, I'm going to pick up that saw even though I'm terrified. And then if you do, even if you don't succeed, you are rewarded with confidence, just a little bit more than what you had before. It's the byproduct. It's the reward. So like you said, when you walk into a room, you might still feel insecure every once in a while. But as soon as you notice that you have an impact on people, that's that reinforcement of, oh, it's working.
So every single night that I put my kids down, my wife does one night, I do one night. We toggle back and forth. Mm-hmm. We both have the same setup in terms of the system that we use to put our kids down, but we do totally different things.
Okay.
I have a list of things. It's funny. Last night, actually, Finn, last night I was putting the boys down and my older son, Finn, said, "Dad, no offense." I was like, "What?" He goes, "No offense, but I think we do too much before bed. Like you do, there's too much." He was like, "We're both tired." And I'm thinking to myself, "Oh my God, this kid's gonna be 9 years old. He's telling me how to do this." But I was like, "Okay." And we do a lot. Like I believe in values. I believe in, you know. But one of the things that I do with my kids every night, and I kind of go through them fast, but maybe they're getting too old for it, is I say, "Hey guys, you know, you can be anything you want to be when you grow up, as long as you do it for yourself and nobody else, and your dad's gonna support you." And then I say, "What's it gonna take?" And they say, "Courage." And I say, "What is courage?" And they say, "Being afraid and doing it anyway, as long as it's for the good." And we've been saying that since they're born.
Yeah.
I mean, and, you know, I've been saying it. And then once they began to talk, they say the courage piece, right?
Yeah.
Teaching humans to be courageous at a young age, in my opinion, is paramount.
Yeah.
It's paramount. Because if they pay attention to what goes on, and my kids do not get electronics. They just don't. They get TV on the weekends, but during the week, nothing. No, they never get an iPad. They never look at a phone. And I'm adamant about it. Mm-hmm. I'm totally down for movies and cartoons on a Saturday or Sunday morning. But man, during the week, nothing. My fear is that they get introduced to this shit that goes around on in media. And it's literally, in my opinion, is literally trying to detach human beings from value, because all they're doing is looking to others for that approval. They're comparing themselves to other people as opposed to looking at themselves. So I know that was a little bit of a rant, but I wanted to say that. And I think it's really, really important to know that, like, this courage piece is so big. You know, and for me, it's come through consistency and confidence.
It is one of the most common parallels that you had asked me earlier, next to confidence, although I do think the two can be tied, next to confidence and self-worth is courage. That is one of the most desired masculine virtues by men. And it's important. It's really important. And I think that you teaching it at such a young age and imparting it, instilling it in them is, it is paramount, but you're also exemplifying it, brother. You know, you're exemplifying it in your actions. And I think that lands and that penetrates way more than words, is that you could say words all you want, but if you don't exemplify, then your kids can actually start to build resentment once they develop a mind of their own of like, am I fucking being manipulated? Mm-hmm. He's not leading by example, you know? Kids follow is what I've learned. Kids follow, and they follow actions, even subconsciously. So you're exemplifying courage. You take risks. You know what I mean? You do risky shit. They see that. Yeah. But courage, I love that you're instilling it in them.
I think it's something that is not talked enough about. And, you know, some people have actually given me shit about, like, the stuff I do, how regimented I am about, like, the nighttime routine with the boys. For me, you know, every single time, tonight, this morning was a prime example. My son Dakota has a condition. He has a gene condition. Mm-hmm. And you would not really know if you met him, but his motor skills are his an imbalance issue. And so from when he was born to 4 years old, he had to get an MRI on his brain, which is real. They have to put him under. They got to do contrast. They got to do a brain MRI every at first it was every quarter. Then years 3 and 4 was every 6 months. Now 6, 7, and 8, it's just once a year. This morning was his MRI. And I was leaving to come down the city, and he was terrified. It's a very scared thing. And I looked at him, and I was holding his head, and I was looking at him, and I was like, "Hey, buddy. You know that thing we talk about every night?" And he was like, and I was like, "What is it?" And he was like, "It's courage." And I was like, I need you to have some of that today, man. This is a moment in your life at 6 years old where you can really lean into this thing. And he looked at me and he, that makes me sad. He looked at me and he smiled in his tears and he said, thanks, Daddy, I love you. Yeah. And I was just like, wow, dude.
Yeah.
You know, so.
The dad's role is a tough one because you're not always going to be the fun one. You're not always going to be the one that's the most nurturing. And yeah, that structure and that systematic approach to shit is probably going to get really annoying, but you're instilling something really important in them. I tell my dads that all the time. You know what I mean? I'm not a dad. This is coming from a place of just the research that I've done, my professional experience, and honestly, some intuition. But this is something that my dads who are clients of mine, often complain about is that, you know, mom is the best friend or whatever, and mom is the buddy and she's so much fun. And dad is always like, dad, you know, and that's frustrating, you know, but I tell them, I say, you know, you have their respect. Full transparency, I'm not a dad. I'm a cat dad, but otherwise I'm not a dad. So I'm pulling from my professional experience and, research, the homework that I've done, and some intuition. And especially in cases of divorce, I'm not going to get too far in the weeds on this, but especially in cases of divorce, a lot of times there's this inclination, let's call it, for the mom and the dad who are maybe at each other a little bit to win, star parent. So the mom will lean into being extra fun. And my personal belief is that they're doing a disservice to not only their children, but to themselves.
There's so much good stuff here.
Interrupting this episode to share with you how we keep this podcast going, and that is by you supporting us through trying out or subscribing to Meal One on creaturesofhabit.com. I am giving a 20% discount on your first order or your first subscription order, which is a serious discount. Meal One is a superfood meal. It is a blend of gluten and glyphosate-free oats. It is packed with 30 grams of plant-based protein, omega-3 fatty acids, a probiotic, digestive enzymes, vitamin D3. It also has chia seeds, flax seeds, pumpkin seeds, and a little bit of pink Himalayan salt. There are 37 grams of healthy carbohydrates and anywhere from 7 to 10 grams of fat, depending on the flavor. You will be full for hours, people. I promise you, we developed Meal One to help you perform at your absolute best, to get that incredibly healthy and convenient edge on the competition. There is not a better, more convenient meal to start your day with or use as a pre- or post-workout meal. The macros are perfect and sourced with the cleanest ingredients in the game. Take your performance to the next level. Make your life much easier by saving time. Be able to eat healthy without sacrificing flavor, and all while staying full for hours, making your urge to snack far, far less. Hop over to creaturesofhabit.com. That is creaturesofhabit.com. And use promo code KOHPOD, the number 20, for your first order of Meal One today. Back to the pod.
There's a few things that I like to accomplish on the show outside of some storytelling and some really great pieces for people to put in their back pocket in the realm of an expert. But morning routine is a big deal in my life. It's a huge deal in my life. My morning routine is like when I'm on it, which is, you know, when I'm traveling, it's tough. There's an ideal morning routine that I have. And then there's like the ideal morning routine is when I'm home and I'm not on the road. The non-negotiables are when I'm on the road. And when I'm on the road a lot, the non-negotiables happen. But I'm not as sharp as I am when I'm doing my ideal. So do you have a morning routine that you like to stick to that you've been doing for a while?
I do. Yeah. It's actually, it's one of the first things that I do with my guys who come to me and say, I need more structure in my life. I really believe that a morning routine is the foundation of a structured lifestyle. Like the foundation, because habits, as you know, and you've seen, and you've probably talked about, are stackable, and I often describe them as like gears that have teeth on their axis, in that the gears connect and they aid in each other's rotation. You have one habit in the morning and you get used to that, it's really easy to stack another habit right on top of that. So if you know that you want to make your breakfast every morning and you have a certain routine of what you eat, but you also know that you want to listen to 30 minutes of an audiobook every morning, what I do is I listen to my 30-minute audiobook while I'm making my breakfast, you know, so they're stackable. And I often tell my guys, start with that, you know. Something else that I know you do that I also like to do is I like to wake up and do something difficult. I forget where I read this, Michael, but it makes sense to me that whenever we wake up, our brain kind of resets and it's looking for its first dopamine hit. So whatever we feed it, whatever the first dopamine hit of the day is how that our brain is going to seek dopamine for the rest of the day. And it makes sense to me logically. You know, I can't confirm this, but I heard it somewhere and it made a lot of sense. I'm going with it because it makes sense to me. So if you wake up and you scroll, if you wake up and you jerk off, if you wake up and you go straight to the coffee pot, these are all pleasures. That's what you just told your brain to seek for the rest of the day. But if you wake up and you do push-ups to failure, if you wake up and you plank, if you wake up and you take a shower and then do, 3 minutes at the end of ice cold, you know, cold exposure, now you're doing something difficult. Now that's pain. And dopamine comes from pleasure and pain. But the dopamine that comes from pain is the kind that lasts longer. And that sets you up to want to be productive for the rest of your day. So that's why I think it's so crucial. I know that there's a lot of guys out there on social media, maybe not a lot, but there's a handful of people on social media who are, you know, the new approach to getting traction on your page is to be controversial by going against something or being polarizing by going against something that's conventionally celebrated or practiced. So there's a few people out there now who are saying, oh, morning routines are overrated. You know, if you want to get shit done, just go wake up and do it for 5 hours. Skip the morning routine. I call bullshit. I think morning routine is crucial to, or is the word you like to use, is paramount for having a structured lifestyle. 100%.
So tell us yours.
All right. So I wake up, first thing I do is one of those three things I mentioned. I either plank, I do a push-ups to failure, or if I hop in the shower, I end my shower with 3 minutes of cold exposure. So I live in an apartment. I don't have access to an ice bath, so I can't do the whole outdoor thing, but I do it there. After that, I pound my first liter of water for the day. That's got to go back. Just some electrolytes, and I just pound that.
Do you have any specific electrolytes you like?
I've tried a few different ones. Honestly, right now I get Stir on Amazon because they don't have any artificial sweetener in it. So I like it for that reason. I think it's monk fruit that they use. So I use that, and I take a little bit of Celtic salt in the morning as well. Half a teaspoon of Celtic salt, and then I just pound a liter of water, and then I get into making my breakfast, which is the same thing every day. Yeah, 5 days a week. It's the same thing.
What is it?
I make like an egg, like frittata, and it has some turkey sausage in it, some broccoli, and some like white corn. That's it. It's
really
plain.
How long does it take you?
How long does it take to make? Oh, no, I make it on Sunday.
Oh,
prep it on Sunday, and then I cut it into five squares, and then I'm set.
I've got a better thing for you in the morning.
Yeah? Okay.
You just have a meal one, baby, all day.
Oh, yeah?
You love it. Have you not tried it yet?
Nah, I haven't.
Oh, dude, we got to get you some meal one, man. Meal one's the bomb.
Okay. All right. You have to tell me about that. I'm always looking for quick fixes as long as they're healthy.
How do you not know about Creatures of Habit Meal One? It's my business. It is a overnight high protein oatmeal that you make. It takes 30 seconds the night before. You pull it out in the morning. It's got 30 grams of plant-based protein.
Okay.
35 grams of carbs, 10 grams of fat, 10 grams of fiber. It's fucking delicious. And it literally is like literally in the morning, you open up the fridge, you pull it out and you eat it. There's like zero prep. You don't even have to pull out a thing, cut the thing, heat it up, nothing. It's just ready.
It's just ready.
I got to get you some of that.
Okay. Right. All right. I won't say no. So while I'm eating that, prep time doesn't take too long. While I'm eating that, I'm listening to an audiobook, whatever it is, you know, for that month. About 20 to 30 minutes of an audiobook. Then I have my coffee. I'm in front of my desk by 6:30, maybe 7, and then I get to work.
You know, there has been a bunch of people that I've seen on social talk about how morning routine is overrated and it's adding more stress to your life. Just get to work or do what you got to do. Get straight to the gym if that's what you do. In my mind, I used to be the guy that would just boom, wake up straight to I have a little thing. I do my prayers. I do my push-ups, but I go straight to the gym.
Yeah.
And I don't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. I fill my morning up most of the time with self-care outside of fitness, because fitness is a non-negotiable. I'm going to do fitness.
Of course.
It's just part of who I am. And anybody who's looking to level up, in my mind, if you're not, if you don't have a fitness routine, that should be the first thing you do, right? Yeah. Like, in my mind, mm-hmm. forgetting about the meditating and the prayers and the reading and the writing. If you're not doing any of that shit and you're not moving your body every single day, fitness is going to bring more value to your mental, physical, and spiritual self than anything else.
Yes.
But I laugh at those guys that say, oh yeah, morning routine, whatever, roll your eyes, too stressful. In my mind, those are the people that are like accepting mediocre in life.
Or they're just being polarizing. Mm-hmm. Because they just want to be controversial, and it's an angle that they can use to get people to comment and say shit.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, no, I'm with you. And I, just to be clear, I think that there are situations where people are after something. You know, if you're an entrepreneur and you are building a business and you need to put in as many hours as you can, or you're scaling your business, or you're a student and you want to, you know, you're going up for your master's, you have some sort of mission, you know, then yes, you want to wake up and you want to make sure that you get as many hours of that in as you possibly can before you start your regular workday. If this is outside of your regular job, then you do want to make sure you get in as many hours as you can. So you might have a shorter morning routine. Mm. But I don't agree with no morning routine. I do think, however, the longer morning routine for guys who come to me and they have no purpose and they say, I'm not doing anything purposeful. I feel stuck. I feel stagnant. I feel misaligned. This is a great way to increase intentionality in your life. This alone, I have seen guys in a 2 or 3 week period, because it's about 3 weeks before it starts to become habit, but they start feeling the effects of it before that. I've seen a major shift in just their disposition, their self-confidence, their energy, their vibe, their mm-hmm. mood, just from having some sort of ritual like this. They start their day right. So, no.
I love that you called it a ritual too.
Yeah.
You know, and one other thing that I want to talk about, we were talking about that brand thesis in before we started shooting. So, I am the kind of guy that I'm always looking for optimization tools, mm-hmm. whether it's a new, you know, massager, whether it's a new stretch or protocol, whether it's a new, you know, thing to do while I'm on a recovery day, or whether it's something that is going to allow me to focus. You know, I give myself every single day, and it's so much less than it used to be, but I give myself a 3-hour chunk of time every single day where there is no calls, no meetings. I am just zeroed in on work, like mm-hmm. work where my, you know, my team knows, like between this hour and this hour, I am, and I get more work done in the 3-hour period of time than I think I used to get in like a 10-hour workday. Now, when I say I like to use like uncover or find or discover optimization tools, I've recently found this brand Thesis that is a nootropic company, and they make, and this is like, hopefully you put this in front of your audience, because I would hope that every, you know, they make these formulas that are very specific to certain tasks or certain things that you want to, that you're about to do, right? And so it's like 3 or 4 pills, and I take based on what I'm doing that day. But typically when I know I got a pile of work and I've got 3 hours to really go for it, they make a formula called Logic that is just like blinders on, and I'm just so deeply focused and present. It's incredible. So like, for instance, today I took creativity, and typically when I podcast, I'll do the creativity formula because I just love being able to not have to like stop and like there's a word that I'm trying to say. It's on the tip of my tongue. I'm like, oh, and this shit just is like, boom. It's just like immediate download. So optimization tools, I think, for everyone, but like specifically men that are looking to be more confident or have a little bit more of a drive in a number of different arenas. There's nothing wrong with looking to optimize.
I agree 100%. And just further testament of that. So this stuff that you talked about, the ketone IQ, whatever you talk about, if it's like, I'll give it a try. If I like it, it's going on my supplement list for my guys. Because when my guys sign up, they get a folder, actually a Google folder with like 9 documents in it. And the 9th document is supplemental resources, you know, or supplement resources. And it's the supplements that I use. And this recently got added on there. So
that stuff is the bomb.
I love this stuff. I will try the thesis, and that might end up on there. Yeah.
The Ketone IQ, what I've been using Ketone IQ for is – I've been on Ketone IQ for many years now. I mean, I think it's got to be the, you know, I've been consistently on it every single day for about 3-4 years. But I was introduced to it about 10 years ago when it was truly like you could not drink it without like gagging, and still the flavor.
Oh, it tasted worse.
Oh, it tasted much worse. It's literally like freshly squeezed orange juice.
Wow.
Compared to what it used to be.
Oh, shit.
But I use it every single morning. So every single morning on an empty stomach, I have 3 drinks in front of me when I'm sitting down with my kids. I have a massive jug of water.
Yep.
I've got my Ketone IQ double shot over ice that I just sip, and I've got my coffee. And those are my 3 drinks every morning. My wife has been making fun of me about it for years because it's always 3 drinks. I always have it every single morning. But the Ketone IQ in the morning really does help me feel clear.
Yeah.
Like there's you know, the ketones are actually breaking the blood-brain barrier, so they're actually feeding my brain.
Mm-hmm.
And my brain is giving me this sort of sense of, I guess you would maybe even call it confidence or focus.
Focus. Yeah.
And so I love that in the morning. And then where I've also been using it, which I think is really interesting for everyone that's listening, is if you're doing a long run, any kind of endurance training, or if you're in the gym doing a high intensity interval program or sprints or intervals of some sort.
Yeah.
Man, like I just started running again pretty consistently. And I'm telling you, like the difference between running with Ketone IQ and without Ketone IQ is fucking huge. It just is.
But even for physical, yes, but even for like tedious work, like in front of a computer, I've heard you talk about it for a while, but we were, it was funny. When we were working together, I noticed the difference from when you took it and when you didn't. So I remember one time we were on a call and I saw you pop one. And after that, you were so zeroed in.
I love
it. And
that.
I was just like, that was the session that I asked you about. I was like, yo, send me a link. Yeah. And I ordered it.
I want to talk about values.
Yeah, man.
Talk about values because you took me through a process, 5 or 6 weeks. I think we missed a few weeks, my fault. And you put a massive pool of words in front of me. And we went from a bunch of words to a lot of words to some words to not a lot of words to like – And it was honestly, dude, it was really, really hard for me.
Yeah.
Because there were so many words in this – pool
mm-hmm.
that I felt like could help describe how I walk through life. Ultimately, what we distilled it down to was 4 words.
That's right.
Family, success, creativity, and authenticity. The
All
four
right,
words.
Brother.
Yeah. Yeah, those are the 4 words that we distilled it down to. And those 4 words, I do believe, you know, and we had to look at like all these different words that I was having such a hard time drawing a line through because courage is a big one for me. Discipline is a big one for me. Happiness is a big one for me. There were so many. Strength.
Yeah. Can't live by all of them.
Right.
Right.
What I found was that my family is the Golden Gates.
Yeah.
The family for me is the Golden Gates. So I actually, you know what? Let me not talk about my shit. I want you to just sort of walk through this value thing.
Sure. Us. One of the things that, you know, when I started coaching, a lot of guys coming to me saying, I feel misaligned. I feel stagnant. And I feel like my life lacks purpose. I feel unfulfilled. So, you know, my first approach to this when I first started doing it was to probe at them. You know, and you know, yes, you can get there that way through just probing at them and then through trial and error. Well, let's try this. Let's see if this works and see what you land on. Once I realized that this was it for me, like coaching is my jam, I thought I want to come up with a methodology that can be applied here. I want to come up with a framework, something that can solve this, you know, an approach. After getting lost in like a Freudian rabbit hole, what I landed on was the answer to, or the key to happiness, at least by Freud standards, was to work and to love. And I thought, okay, well, work, that's quantifiable. I'll just figure out what their strengths are. You know, that's like an aptitude test that you take in college and you figure out what career path is best for you. I'll give them an assessment of their character strengths. But love, I'm like, how do I quantify love? And then I even got lost in for a while on, is it even the right path to try and teach people that happiness and purpose comes from having a life partner? But then I realized, I was like, love is not exclusive to having a life partner. Love can be loving your siblings. Love can be all different people. It can be loving your friends. It's just having love in your life. And then I went even farther and I realized love doesn't even end at people. You can love travel. You can love nature. You can love your morning routine. You can love fitness. You can love your craft. You can love art. It's just about doing things that you love. And that's how I landed on values. I said, this would be what I would assess in people to figure out what it is that they love in life, what's important to them. And what I found that I loved about values is that they're not universal. They're very personal. And you saw this. They're very, very personal. It's not about what's right or wrong. They're not ethics. It's not about moral uprightness. It's about what's important to you and not what you think people should, what you think people are going to want you to think is important. It's mm-hmm. about you. Do I think that having some connection with humanity and wanting to be a good person is helpful in cultivating purpose if it's part of your values? I do. But this is how I landed on values. So then it was just about coming up with a formula. And that's just something that I kind of tweaked over the years. It was trial and error. I started out with like a massive list of words. Maybe it was 100 words. Now it's probably 200 plus because I kept on adding words in. You gave me one. Ferociousness was in there, but you gave me another word, brother.
Yeah, I don't remember that happen.
You gave me a word. Yeah, anyway. So as you can see, words get added in. But then I just needed to come up with a formula of how to narrow it down. And you see, it's like I'm scrutinizing in the way that I do it. But it took years of tweaking that to get it right so that the values actually can be something that will serve you as a roadmap that when you're conflicted in life about what kind of actions to take, that you have something that you could refer to guide you.
And filter.
Yeah, exactly. So you could say, in emotional regulation, I know that I don't want to act on this feeling, but I still don't know what I should do. Well, fuck what you should do. Why don't you do – let's look at the man that you want to be. These are the values of the man that you want to become. So what would the man you want to become do? Do something that's in alignment with those values. So that's how I've learned to help people cultivate alignment in their life or a feeling of purpose or a feeling of fulfillment is by living in alignment with their values. And they have to be used intentionally. You know, you have to have them in front of you. That's why I was so happy when you memorized yours.
Is what I gave you.
Chivalry. Yeah.
Because yeah. I was listening to you say this and I'm thinking to myself at the same time, you know, there's like – I want to go back and like move some shit around because there's you know, values, like you hear about core values. When someone says core values, very few people are going to think about a human being. Most people are going to think about an organization, a business.
Sure. So, yeah. You know. Yeah. Like a company culture, company values, stuff like that. Yeah. Right.
And do you dive into this in your book?
I do.
So tell us about the book.
Yeah. Honestly, for anybody out there who wants to assess their values, there is a play-by-play, step-by-step in how to do it right in the book. If you want a more comprehensive, more scrutinizing approach like you and I did, they could reach out to me directly. But the book is – it has the values assessment in it. It has the voice work in it that we were talking about a little bit. There's some body work in there about developing not just strength, but a strong physical presence, you know, down to the way you sit, openness, posture, the way you walk, you know, releasing tension in the body. I talk about meditation a little bit, emotional regulation, courage. Courage is a big one. Yeah.
You know, so you say emotional regulation, and I know we got to wind down here, but there's a few more things that I just want to touch upon. So emotional regulation, I think, is such a – it's – you know, I experienced something last night that I can't really get into because whatever, but we're on the topic of men.
Yeah.
So I'm going to use this thinking about how a man should conduct.
Mm-hmm.
Self-awareness, I think, is so crucial for moving the needle and getting things done. And if you are an emotional human and don't know that or don't believe that, arguably, and there's nothing wrong with being emotional in my opinion. It's when you allow the emotions to actually trigger a response mm-hmm. that is going to come off irrational. And there are many men that I've encountered, and myself included, I really had to check myself like early on in my career as an entrepreneur because, man, like I'm an emotional dude. And when somebody does something that I don't want them to do or says something that makes me feel insecure, you know, I want to like – I want to tense up. I want to let right. them know why right. mm-hmm. I. And there was an experience last night. I was on this call and this guy who is a mountain physically, financially, experientially, mountain of a man
mm-hmm.
had the most unbelievable emotional response to what was going on this call.
Mm.
And it was – I couldn't believe it. It changed my perspective of this person
mm.
because I'm like, man, at that level, to conduct like that, like I know for sure at this stage in my life, emotional regulation or irregulation
yeah.
in a setting of business or in a setting of fatherhood, to allow your emotions to dictate what comes out of your mouth, how you move your body – in a defensive way, never is going to amount much, right? Like
right.
you're never going to really get shit done when you're acting out of emotion. And so I think that that is one piece for anybody listening that is Ooh. That I think is crucial from my experience because I was very emotional as a business person
yeah.
early on in my career. My business partner used to battle it out, man, fight it out. And it was typically me that would just be I would feel attacked. I would feel
yeah.
Spoken down to. And man, I didn't like that. So I would just react.
Lash out.
Lash yeah. out, react. And I think giving grace, meaning time, between something that somebody does or says and how you choose to respond, right? Like I like to say there's a big difference between reacting and responding. You know, reacting to a fucking fist coming to your face
sure.
makes sense.
Yeah.
Responding mm-hmm. in every other area of life where you're not in like physical harm is the way I like to walk through. Because
yeah.
typically if I react, I'm not giving myself enough time to process what's going on. And man, like sitting there on the thing, watching this, sitting there on the call last night, watching this guy react, I was like, man, like a little bit of grace there would have just changed the whole way that conversation went, you know? And so I just say, hey, like you sort of triggered that for me and feeling like I want to add value on the podcast. If you're feeling emotional, if you're feeling defensive, if you're feeling like your point is not getting across and you feel wronged or you feel like the people that are sitting around don't believe what you have to say, before you go ahead and stomp your feet and beat your chest and look like an idiot, take a breath, right?
Like, yeah.
That is so much more powerful.
Well, yeah. And I mean, to your point – because you said it starts with awareness. I think you're right. And I also want to say, because you mentioned this as well, and I'm glad you did, which is that there's nothing wrong with being emotional. I love being emotional. I love having emotions and I love feeling feelings. They make me feel alive.
Mm.
I love to feel. Mm. I really do. That said, I don't want them to guide my actions in life. I want my values to guide my actions in life. Feelings are fleeting and feelings are ephemeral. And the first step in emotional regulation is awareness. It's emotional awareness, is being able to recognize when you're feeling something. And that's when you could do what you just said, which is to, in that window between when you recognize that you're feeling something and the action that you're about to take, there is time for you to stop. And when you don't have your values assessed, you may be left feeling directionless of like, I know I don't want to act on this feeling, but I don't know what to do. That's when your values are going to save your life. Because your values, it doesn't matter what you're feeling. Even if you're in the middle of feeling rage or frustration, regulating it doesn't mean that you're able to make the feeling go away in the mm-hmm. moment. Regulating it means that you don't respond to it. That means that while, it's kind of like courage. When you're feeling fear, you act in courage anyway. So while you're feeling annoyed, while you're feeling frustrated, while you're feeling offended or violated by whoever was condescending to you, that you then can refer to your values and you don't have to think a lot because you know what your values are and they're going to guide you to an action. I'll tell you one quick story. And I think this lines up nicely with it's sort of about emotional regulation. I think it's more about values. But it's a little bit of both and a little bit of nobility. We are not our thoughts and feelings. You can think nice things about somebody all day long and think pleasant thoughts. But if you're an ass, if you do asshole things, you're an asshole. And it works the other way around. You could have murderous thoughts when you're at the grocery store. But if you're a kind person in your actions, you're not a murderer. You're a kind person. We're our actions. We're not our thoughts and our feelings. So, you know, I'm driving home on a Friday and this was like a binge night. Like I was driving home from Popeye's. So it's me and Popeye, you know, he's in the passenger seat and I smell it. I'm ready to eat it. I'm so excited about my Popeye's. It's just going to be me in front of the TV with my Popeye's. And just as I'm less than a mile from my apartment, I see that there is a guy pulled over on the side of the road. And I really don't feel like stopping. Like I'm not saying that I'm not a good person. I think I am. But again, it's based on my actions, not my feelings, because I didn't feel like stopping. I don't know anybody who does. I don't know anybody who thinks, you know what would really make this night? If I had to pull over and just let my food get cold and not eat it. Nobody's thinking that. So I begrudgingly stopped, pulled down the passenger side window. Hey, brother, you good? Oh, yeah, man, thank you. I'm good. I threw my hand up like, all right, cool. And I took off and I went home and I was like, thank God. My point is, the emotion that I was feeling was definitely one of desire, which is I don't want to stop. I don't feel like stopping. I want to go home and I want to eat my food. The regulation was I'm not going to let my feelings guide my actions. I want to let my values guide my actions. And my values are telling me that even though I don't want to stop, I'm going to, hoping that he says he's fine. But I'm going to stop nonetheless, and I'm going to ask. And I think that for everybody out there who thinks that being a good person means that you think and feel like being a good person all the time, no, brother, no, no. We're human. We have desires of the flesh. And again, I think that's where your values are going to save you. It's about our actions. Even when we don't feel like doing them, we do them anyway. And that's what the values are there for. They're a roadmap to the actions that are going to make us go to sleep at night feeling like a good person.
I think that's a perfect way to close this thing, man. I mean, we talked about a lot, and I think some of that, I mean, there's so many different habits that we discussed sort of like lightly and loosely without calling them specific habits that people can implement into their lives. Self-awareness.
Yeah.
Thinking through values, right? And if you can't think about it on your own, or you don't have a system or figure out a system to do it, buy Frank's book or connect with him and have him help you the way he helped me, because that was awesome. Your morning routine thing, you know, what I try to do in this 45-minute long piece is have the listener, part of the community, walk away and say, wow, like I've never thought of that. Let me chew on that for a little while and see if it works for me. And I know for sure that we conquered that in this episode. So I appreciate you, dude.
I really appreciate you too, brother. Thank you for this.
Absolutely. Outside of the Times Square boombox with like Bad Bunny or whoever.
That was emotional regulation.
I let my emotions get the best of me on that one. I certainly did. But aside from that, man, we crushed this. And I'm really, really grateful for you. I'm grateful for the work that you've done with me. And I'm grateful for you being here and making it in from Dirty Jurors.
My privilege, brother. Really. Thank you.
This was a great episode. I knew it would be. I knew it would be. But I feel really good about it.
Awesome. Cool.
All right, y'all. So that was another fantastic, fantastic episode where it just sort of reaffirmed some of the things that I went through with Frank when we worked together, but also just made me feel like I'm headed down the right path. I'm headed down the right path. You know, I've done a lot in my life, and I know that I haven't even scratched the surface of what's to come. I've got at least 50 years ahead of me, so I am never not learning. You guys know that I appreciate you and I love you. I really do. If you would leave a 5-star rating and a review, that would mean the world. That's how this podcast grows. Check out creaturesofhabit.com and, you know, pick up some Meal One or some Nightcap or some merch, or grab our habit stacking journal, which is pretty dope. Other than that, make sure you check out Frank Paul Vignola on Instagram. Where can we find you, Frank?
FrankPaulVignola.com, or you can catch me at Vignolagram on Instagram.
And there you have it, folks. I hope we delivered some valuable content for you to implement into your life on a daily basis. Please remember that our habits have the power to make us or break us. Replacing bad habits with great ones is the answer to living a life of happiness, optimism, and high performance. We are capable of achieving anything. We all have what it takes to give it all we've got. Commit to one great habit each day and truly commit, and watch how everything in your life starts evolving from good to great. If you enjoyed this podcast, please follow us wherever you listen to your podcasts. Give us a 5-star rating and a nice review. That will help us grow this podcast, bring on more amazing guests, and continue to deliver invaluable content on a weekly basis. Lastly, please share this podcast with any friends or family that you think might appreciate it. And always remember, want plus do equals have. Until the next one, fam. Peace.